Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Behind Massive Screens, a game development podcast here at Massive Entertainment in Malmö, Sweden. My name is Petter. I don't think I've ever said my name on an episode, but my name is Petter.
Oh.
And I'm joined, as always, by Dori.
Okay. You're getting closer to getting it correct. My name is Dori.
Dori.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's take this off air, I think. let's workshop this for a couple of hours. And let's not get started on your last name. Look it up. So before we get to our esteemed guest, and we're going to have fun trying to pronounce his name correctly as well.
Oh,
we had a little crash course here before. Didn't really work out. Just a couple of things I want to mention real quick. First of all, we've been for a couple of episodes, but we haven't said it. We're on YouTube as well now.
Which is how you can see us right now.
Exactly.
If you're already watching on YouTube.
Exactly. So you've already seen the guest if you're watching on YouTube.
Well, hello. Which is why you should.
The mystery man in the corner. Anyway. If you want to check us out, please just, we'd love if you just keep listening to the podcast, but if you want that alternative, some people are weird, go to YouTube. And also speaking of YouTube and stuff you say on YouTube, but for podcasting, please, rate and review us if you feel like it.
Like and subscribe.
Oh.
Yeah. Like and subscribe, rate and review.
Boomer over here doesn't know the lingo.
No. I'm too old for YouTube. That's why we have now George behind the scenes. He's young enough for YouTube. But yeah, please rate and review us. Leave a rating on Spotify if you listen there, a review on Apple Podcasts, etc. That'd be really helpful. Now we've done our due podcast diligence when it comes to that stuff.
And we have an email address now. So because what we want is to give you, the audience, what you want. So if there's any specific job title within gaming that you want to learn more about, any specific personality that you already know within Massive that you want to hear more about, well, send us an email to...
Whoa, on the spot. Behind Massive Screens at massive.se.
Yeah, and on YouTube you can see it like...
It's down there.
Right here. But yeah, let's start the show.
Yeah, let's get...
A lot of people already clicked off because this is too long.
probably. But welcome, Kiltek, environment artist here at Massive Entertainment. Did I get it right?
No. But hey, the attempt was there. I appreciate it.
Okay. So welcome.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you here. We haven't actually talked about environment art before. I'm really excited to get into it. But let's start out, as we always do, just to introduce what you actually do. On a high level, just a description of what does an environment artist do?
On a very, very high level, I make things look pretty. That's my entire job. I think the podcast is done now.
Yep.
Me and Dory can use that.
You got all the details that you wanted.
Yeah. That was everything you wanted to know.
Thank you very much. Rate and review.
But on a very high level point, it's making the world of the games, the levels that you play, look as good as they can, playable. That's the very high level point of it. I mean, there's not so much to it to explain to that much in high detail. So if you like go in depth, there's a lot more to it. But in high detail, make things look pretty.
Yeah. And in a studio like Massive Entertainment, which is known for its open world games, I mean, that is a big task because, I mean, making a world in a linear game, you have a lot of corners that you can cut. But in an open world game, you need to make stuff look good from all angles.
Exactly. Yeah. If you, especially in nowadays, the games, all angles also become the sky. So that gives it another form of, you need to pay attention on your roofs, for example, where before you could like, I'm going to cut a corner here. We're going to save some performance here. We're not going to put in a roof on this. Yeah, that's not a thing anymore.
we are definitely going to go in depth of what you do and kind of look at those roofs a little bit more in a while. But first, we just want to know as well, how did you end up at Massive Entertainment? How did you end up in the industry and how did you come here? Because I know there's a couple of interesting things in your history that we would love to talk about.
Yes.
Let's start from the beginning.
Oh, though. God. The beginning, like 24 years ago, beginning. I was born in 1998. the very beginning is I guess it all started with Legos
right.
for me. Like, how long do you want this story to be?
Let's go.
Yeah, we got about an hour.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We're going to have to book a little bit more time. but it all started with Legos. It sounds a little silly if you say it out loud, like, oh, I play with Legos, so now I'm in the video game industry. One-on-one connected is two, right? but I just really loved making things, and I, after a while, stopped even following the plans of the Lego sets because I was a rebel, of course. After years of playing with the Legos, I discovered the beauty of the computer, you know, and I discovered video games. And the one video game that I did discover was Minecraft, of course.
Kind of goes hand in hand, yeah.
Yeah, and I did a lot of building on there, and I on a very high level, it is kind of the same as making environments for games, because I was making worlds and I was working together with YouTubers and was even making money out of it. It was kind of a job for me as a 15, 14, 16-year-old, you know, making those big bucks on Minecraft. It was amazing. That developed me to going into wanting to make it into a job because once I realized that I could make money out of creating things, I was like, oh, there should be like something more. And then I was like, oh, video game development. Yeah, that's kind of what I want to do. That's kind of where I'm at. So I went to my parents and I asked, hey, there's this digital arts school, a high school in Belgium. It was called Digital Arts Film and Entertainment. And I wanted to go there, but the school at the time didn't have quite as good as a name, the school itself. There was a little controversy. I don't know exactly what it was. I was too young to even understand. But the school didn't have that great of a name. So my mom was like, no, you're going, if you want to do art, you can do some architectural arts. So she put me in a school.
That does kind of make sense with the Minecraft thing as well.
It made sense. The architecture, the building, everything kind of aligned. It was like, I'll take it. You know, I'll take what I can get. So I started my studies there, and it was a lot of sculpting with clay, traditional mediums and all this kind of thing, but nothing digital, which was always like kind of the thing that I wanted to do. I wanted to go digital. And the school year went fine. And at the end of the school year, we had this parent meeting. And I casually brought up, hey, I want to change schools, you know. And my teacher kind of looked at me and said like, oh, yeah, no, if you change schools, you're going to like throw everything away that you've been doing. And like, you're not going to make it. Very soul crushing for kids to hear.
That's kind of awful, actually.
Yeah,
that's an awful thing to say.
I still thank her for that moment because that's the point that led me to here. So
the rebel came back.
Thank you.
Look at me now.
If you're watching, thank you for telling me I wasn't going to make it. Thank you. Because after that, my mom took me aside after that parent meeting, because my parents were there, of course. And she was also like, uh-huh, okay. You know, a little bit of sass in there. And she took me aside and she's like, oh yeah, you're going to that other school. And I'm like looking, oh, really? Oh, that's amazing. So the next year I went to that other school. And I started my my career. I want to say career, but like the start of the career started there, right? Started learning 3D modeling, 3D animation, everything about digital media and also film. But the film wasn't really what I wanted to do. But or later years were split into two kind of things. You had like web design or film, and then I went to web design because it felt more close to game design. And my high school ended with a final year project, which is an entire year that you get to make a project. And you kind of make a proposition, you show it to the teachers, and they're like, okay, you can do this, or you can't do this, do something else. And I proposed, hey, I want to make a game. And then at first, they all kind of just look at me like, oh, really? Because we don't teach that here. Because it wasn't the game design school, right? So they didn't have the knowledge about how to make games either. So they just kind of told me like, hey, if you really want to do it, do it. We're not going to be able to help you that much, but go for it, you know? And I took that challenge and I was like, yeah, okay, sure, let's do it. And worked on it an entire year. Tons of YouTube tutorials, like tons of it.
What did you work in?
In Game Maker Studio. Okay, yeah, the one engine that I was able to learn because it was 2D pixel art and I did not have the vast knowledge of 3D engines. So yeah, Game Maker Studio was my to-go engine for my very first project. And it went pretty well up to the point where my teacher in the second semester of the year kind of discarded his original teaching plans and wanted to teach the class how to make a game. So that kind of resulted in both of us teaching the class because we had kind of the same knowledge. Some people were coming to me like, hey, how did you make that character jump? I'm like, oh boy, I can't remember. There was a lot of things going on there, but that really opened a doorway for me to go to game design. Because my teacher there then also told me like, hey, there's this school called Digital Arts and Entertainment in Belgium that focuses on specific game design. I was like, wow, that's perfect. I mean, choice made, right? Just go there, just start in the game industry immediately. And I started that game design school, did it in 4 years. And the last year is like a final project where you make a game in a group and then a internship, right? And for my internship, I went to Brighton, England, to Electric Square. I learned a lot there, but it wasn't really for me. It was a great time, but personally, the country wasn't my kind of cup of tea, to say, you know, England. So I went back home and I was like, oh, I don't really know where to go with my career or what I want to do. So I wanted to go for a small indie studio close to home. You know, I just finished school. Like, I don't want to go far away. it happened that a company at the time, a small indie company in Belgium, contacted me saying like, hey, do you want to work for us? And I'm like, wow, everything's falling together. This is great. And then they asked me, hey, do you want to do an art test? I'm like, sure. I make the art test, handed it in. Other people were also applying for the job, of course. And eventually I get the email back saying, hey, we decided not to go forward with you, but with somebody else. And I was like, okay, that's fine. It's the industry. It's competitive. Everybody makes great art. And I asked, hey, but can I know what I could do better? And they came back to me with the most peculiar, odd feedback I've ever heard in my life. And it made me so angry. They told me my work was too detailed.
Whoa.
And I was so angry. I was literally like, how? I mean, you're asking me to make an art test and I'm showing you the best capabilities of what I can do. If you want me to make it worse, I mean, no problem.
Yeah, you can always scale down.
Yeah, I can scale down, but I felt like it was harder to scale up. So I show you the best work I can deliver to you. Which got me very confused and angry and shifted my mindset 100% to like, I don't want to work for an indie company. I'm going big. which led me to doing probably the best decision that I've ever made in my life is I added Guerrilla Games on LinkedIn and I just kind of sent him a message saying like, hey, can I get an interview? That was it. I didn't send anything more and I also didn't quite expect a response back. I was just kind of, oh, I'm going to send it and that's going to be it, you know, never going to hear back from him because, you know, who's going to respond to give me an interview? but little to my surprise, 4 minutes later, I got a response in 4 minutes saying like, oh yeah, what's your email address? I'm like, wow, that worked. Great. Amazing. I sent him my email address. We go back and forth on mails with our team and the recruiters. And a couple of months later, they hired me as a junior environment artist for Horizon.
There you go.
It was an amazing opportunity, especially because I just started out in the industry. It was like, wow, how the fuck did I get here? Can I, wait, can I swear?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so how the fuck did I get here? And it was a year contract because the Netherlands has a weird system on how contracts work. So I still don't like it. But it was a year contract. And at the end of the year, my contract was getting at its end and they couldn't extend it for several reasons. But some people there were in close contact with some leads here at Massive. And they sent a message over to here saying like, hey, we got this guy. He's got to leave. Great work. Wow, I'm blowing it. Great work, yeah. Pat on my own back.
It's very detailed.
Yeah, it's very detailed. Trust me. and he sent a message to a lead here at Massive saying like, yeah, you should interview him. And then without me knowing, I suddenly get a mail like, hey, here's an interview for Massive. I'm like, when did this happen? you see him coming from behind his desk. He's like, hey, I sent some messages. I'm like, ah, thanks. Didn't even know where I was going to go back to Belgium, you know. Right. Didn't go back to Belgium. did the interview, did an art test. They were very happy with the details in it. It's going to be a reoccurring thing.
I think so too. It's going to be the standing joke
The episode. They liked the art test. They liked the interviews and they offered me a contract. And I moved here and now I've been here for a year and a half, maybe a year and 4 months, something like that. Mm-hmm. Time flies.
I'd like to do a survey in the industry to kind of see that teacher who changed their teaching plan because of your game that they wanted to start teaching that. How many people are in the industry right now because that happened?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Who went to that class and then, yeah.
Exactly.
That is a great question. I can message him.
Yeah, we need to find out. If you're watching this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll send him the link.
Now, I mean, such a great story and so many things that I want to unpack there. But like the through line is like, this is the exact reason that I wanted to be a part of this podcast, because one of the number one questions that I get and comments that we get, you know, on YouTube is like, oh, how should I get started in the gaming industry? Like, what is the path? Where should I start? And the only answer that I always have, and as someone who hasn't gone through and been a game developer, my answer is always like, do. You know, find your passion and do, and then work your way through it and find, like, and that is like exactly what you've done, starting from Legos and Minecraft and then just kind of forging your path towards what you wanted to do. That's fascinating.
Yeah, everything just kind of fell together for me. I mean, I never say, I mean, I agree with you, like, just do it. It's true. Just go for it and do it. But there is no straight path. Like, you can, I've heard stories from people studying economics and then suddenly like, oh, I like drawing. Well, here I am, concept artist.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can just look through, like, go through the episodes we've done, both those and the project we did before, and just hear the various, like, some people come, like, from different schools and they've gone through that. But others just come from these random directions and ended up like doing 3D modeling for mining companies at one point, I think. And then all of a sudden they're here. It's really, and I love the Minecraft thing. That's what I really wanted you to bring that up, because I think it's a generational thing as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You and a generation can actually get started in actual games like Minecraft. For me, that's still something that's fairly new. I'm much older than you were. So it feels weird that we're ended up in this point now where people actually get started in that game to this degree and actually made money selling buildings in Minecraft.
Yeah. I made the big bucks.
For you, for YouTubers?
Oh, yeah.
How old are you?
Oh, I'm 24.
Oh, God.
Just turned 24 in October.
No, but it's super cool to see, because it's just such a different thing. Even though you went to school afterwards, like getting started in something like Minecraft.
Yeah, it's like a foundation. Like, it's weird to think about, but there are like these communities in that game that actually develop games in the game, which right. is very like weird to think about. Like one of the most popular servers in that game has their own modding community and like game design community who come up with mini games the entire time, and they've gotten so far that they're actually developing their own game right now.
Right.
Their server is like Hypixel, and now they have a studio called Hytale, and they're making a game called Hytale, and it's like wildly accepted around the entire community, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a part of, it's like, it's an interesting progression that I've been kind of looking at for, I mean, game developers used to start modding, you know, they modded games. Mm. And you know, created skins, created game modes and stuff, and then we had the huge proliferation of game engines being free, and you could just drop in. But now, inside games giving you the tools to make a game within the game, it's just like it's constantly evolving and giving an easier platform every single time to a new generation.
Yeah, absolutely. Like giving the power to the players to actually experience or like experiment with the ability to, you know, develop skills that you never thought you were going to have is quite unique.
Yep.
It's definitely for this time and age. Like, who would have thought 20 years ago, going to a game, develop some skills and make a career out of it?
Yeah. And it's perfect for you as well. Like, we're going to delve into environment art very, very soon. But I guess that's a good, as you mentioned, as well, for Minecraft as a beginning to actually create these, like, not only how cool it is to get started on a game design journey, but just the creative skills and the creativity that you're able to unleash and actually create these buildings and environment for other people is really interesting as well. Just the kind of tools that game gives you.
Yeah, like in general, when you think about it, it's like a game of cubes where you make houses. But after a while, when you've been doing it or when you've been playing that game for so long, you start to think of like, oh, what composition could be really cool here? And you think to yourself, where did I learn the word composition? When did I start doing this? How did I think about this? Reveal points? What? what is going on here? Oh, what if I place a door here to block this off so I can make my exit way cooler? It's like, you start thinking about these things that you never ever thought about, and it just it makes your entire project like go to the next level without even realizing it is. And I'm sure that like hundreds of thousands of players have gotten these skills just by playing.
Yeah, I can't get further than building a square house made out of rocks in that game. So I'm so impressed to
see. Okay. I can teach you some tips and tricks.
Awesome. Oh yeah. That's about a massive Minecraft server.
Oh yeah.
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 Yeah. I'm in.
Doors up for it. All right. Environment art though.
Mm-hmm.
You said you make things pretty, but obviously you make things pretty in the environment. Yeah. Did you see that reveal coming?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That was a build up.
But what kind of, we have a little list of stuff here we're going to talk about, but let's start out with kind of, you have nothing. Like you, darkness. What kind of information do you get? Like, okay, so we need the environment for this place.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get started? Where in the process do you come in? What other teams do you work with, for example, to actually know what you're supposed to make pretty?
Yeah. Most of the time we come in a little bit later. Because you first have narrative teams making like the stories and the ideas of the places that are happening, what happened in them and everything. And then you have the level designers who make a block out of those locations where you then get a gray box area, and they hand that over to us. And they're like, here is your environment. Now work with it, make it look pretty. And then you go in phases making it. First, an acceptable first, it's still kind of a block out state. It's like actually blocking out the big shapes. It's like, okay, here's the shapes of the landmark, the eye catchers and everything. It's very broadly looked upon. Like if you look from a far distance, it's the only shapes you're going to see. But those are also very important because that's what makes it unique,
right?
And what makes it stand out. And then after your kind of done with that phase, you start iterating in that environment and start blocking out like groups of or clusters of props and set dressing and everything, and you go in further and further and further until you reach a polishing phase where you're really going into the nitty gritty of I'm going to place a piece of toilet paper here on the side because there was a man running from left to right, and you make these stories in your head to make those environments come to life, right? And that's, to me, that's the most fun part. It's the last part, right, where you make those stories and then you work together with narrative design because they come up with the characters in the buildings. They're like, oh, this character has a crush on that character, and you're like, okay, with this information, I can now make my own stories of like what happened through the environment.
Right. That must be a skill in itself. I think it like block out like the gray boxing of an area where it's just, can you just like squint and kind of see in front of you? That because that has to be a skill in itself, being able to take what looks just essentially, it's called gray boxing for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's just gray boxes in a gym essentially. Can you, are you just able to squint straight away and see like, ah, this could become, or is it something that over time is grows from the original block?
I would say it could be a complete mix of both, right? Because we also have concept artists,
right?
Who come in with like, oh, we heard about your great idea here. Here is our version of this great idea. Now make it, you know. And concept art.
Make this thing into the game.
Yeah, just take this and then make it 3D. Okay.
Simple, right?
It's as simple as that. You just do it. You know, yeah. It's fine. There's nothing to it. But yeah, they come in and that helps tremendously in lots of situations, right? The level designer would look at that and they're like, okay, there's a big shape here, there's a big shape there. And then I come in, I look at it. Okay, there's some detail here, there's some detail there. And you just kind of copy it as close as you can, because most of the time a concept artist is approved by art director. So there's a lot less iteration that you need to do. And then it goes very smoothly. But there are also situations where you don't have that concept art and it's a lot more loose, and also like, you get a lot more creative freedom. There's still this overall idea you want to convey of the location that you're working on, but the way that you get to that end point is a lot more creative, and you can work a lot more together with the level designers themselves. Like, oh, what if we like add an extra path here? How would that work out? And then there's kind of this conversation you have that kind of ping pongs back and forth over the level designers and the level artists and everything. And other teams, of course.
Okay, so it's not like a top-down design where the level designer has all the paths set out and then you come in and make it pretty. It also can go back if you make something cool and they think, oh, we can make a secret tunnel or...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they will come in with their design, and a lot of the situations, that's what you go with, and you make that as good as you can. But there's also situations where they come with that design and you just have this crazy, stupid idea where you're like, I want a dragon here, you know? And then they're going to be looking at you, a dragon, make it two, you know? And you get this conversation and eventually...
That's how Skyrim happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure.
We only have three. Can we have 10? Sorry.
Yeah. And you just get this conversation and most of the time it's for the better. Because collaboration means, you know, the best thing that you can get in the end.
Right. Now, I always feel like great art comes out of limitations as well. Because you're talking about you want to make things pretty and detailed, but then it needs to run on the systems.
Yes.
So how do you tackle that in terms of, do you already have in mind when you're designing the environment of like, oh, I can't spruce up too much here because, you know, I'm going to run into issues? Or do you just make it as polished and cool as possible and then start taking things away?
Yes. Well, there's multiple ways to approach it. Like, I feel like I'm going to say this a lot. There's multiple ways to approach it. And that's because it's true. There are artists like do exactly what you said. It's like they bring it to the best possible way that they can and then go back in and remove a lot of things, which is one of the ways that I like to work, is I make it as good as I can. And
as
then
detailed as...
see what's going on here?
As detailed as possible. Yes. So yeah, I bring it to the best possible state that I can get it, and then I go back in and do a performance pass, as if you would like to call it like that, and I look at my entity count, and see how many unique assets I'm using. If there's, for example, an asset that I'm only using once, that is taking up performance because it needs to be loaded in. The textures need to be loaded in. If it's only used once, it's kind of a waste. So then it's better to just get rid of that asset and replace it with something that you've already used before, because that asset is already streamed into the game.
Right.
So it's a lot of give and take most of the time of like, oh, what can I get away with? Or if I spread these assets out more, do I have more performance in this area or that area? And it's a balance of what am I allowed to do to make it run smoothly but still look good.
Yeah, and one thing that you mentioned there, using an asset once can seem like a waste, which means that you want to be able to reuse assets and, mm-hmm. well, merge them with others to create new assets.
Yeah, kid bashing. Oh, yeah. I see where you're going with this.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a thing called kid bashing, which is taking multiple assets and smashing them together into a new asset, and hopefully fool players to think that it's a unique asset, right? Which is, I love kit bashing. It's one of my favorite things to do ever.
The Lego thing coming in again? Or?
Yes. Everything goes back. We're full circle. Yeah, kit bashing is definitely one of my favorite things to do, because like you said before, the limitations, right? That's where your limitations come in. Think of getting four assets and they're like, now make this entire level with four assets. You're going to have to be really creative to make that location look unique with just four assets. It's possible. With four assets, it might look very repetitive, but you have a bit more.
Yeah. You actually brought up during the pre-interview an interesting thing. You did kit bash?
Ah, yeah.
We have to.
Yeah, okay, yes. When I was working at Horizon, at a certain point, I was working on an area. It was like a store kind of thing, and I made a mannequin completely out of lamps.
I think it's so beautiful.
It looked really well, and when I showed my lead and the art director, they were confused, because they were like, why do we have a mannequin? We don't have this asset. I'm like, oh no, it's lamps. And you can imagine their faces right now going like, oh, that must be so expensive. I'm like, yeah, it's not running. I think there were like 250 lamps in there or something. But the shape was perfect. I had an hour to kill, you know.
That's what you do, right?
Yeah, the creativity of an environment artist.
We actually, I love this not only because of the creativity that can come out of it, but also because one discussion we had with Frederick Thailander, who's a game designer here, in episode 2 of the podcast, is games are often cheating. Like, oh, yeah. You have to cheat so much when it comes to not only game design and the kind of the way characters work and interact with the world, but definitely the world itself can be very much cheating. Like placing, as you talked about, kit bashing, like placing stuff in various angles and various, like, sticking out of each other or just merging them into walls or whatever, just to create something completely new out of what you have.
Yeah, there's this saying, it's like fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah.
That's game design in a nutshell. We fake everything. Like, if you think something's real, oh boy, you are wrong. But the beauty of it is like getting away with it, right?
Right.
That's where the beauty is hidden in it, because if you can convince the players that this is how it's supposed to be, oh, you did a great job.
Yeah.
Because they will never know, but you will sit there and like, oh, I see what you did there. Which is also like this thing when you start playing other games as a game designer or working in the game industry, you start noticing these things, right?
Yeah.
You see like texture seams or whatever, anything that you can like notice, you're like, ah, I see what you did there. And then you kind of take what they did and you're like, I'm going to apply that to my work.
Right. Yeah. I had the same thing after I went to film school. I stopped seeing movies the same way, because now I'm constantly looking, oh, there's a light there, 3-point lighting, and like, oh, what lens are they using? It's like I analyze films as I'm watching them. So is it the same for you when you're playing games? You're kind of analyzing how did they get the performance in this area? And oh, there's a repeated asset. Or
absolutely. In Belgium, we have this term called beroepsmisvorming, right? It's like a job malfunction. It's kind of, you take your job with you wherever you go. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of this thing where I'm walking on a street and I'm like, wow, how could I make this door? How many polygons would this be? If I open this, what kind of access do I need? And you start analyzing everything. And that's the same in games. You're like, oh, why is there an arch here? Oh, it's to block off the view so that if you rotate around the corner that you have this reveal, right? You analyze everything. And it's a blessing and a curse because you can't enjoy the same games anymore as you used to.
Do you ever get to move in a game? You just get stuck somewhere and just look around and kind of see.
I play a lot of competitive games.
Right.
And
so you're just standing there getting shot?
There's been moments where I've been staring at a rock. I'm like, wow, the detail on this is incredible. And you get shot in the head and you're like, ah, damn. Didn't think about that one.
Yeah, we've had the discussion with guests before as well. That especially in movies, people have been, as you said, like in film school or animation school or similar, watching a movie once just to do that. Like, get the analysis out of the way. That's done. Okay, let's watch it again and actually enjoy the movie now.
Yeah.
So I guess that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I read about the three C's once, just like a very detailed paper about why doors are always taller in games, in third-person games. It's so that the camera can go through without tipping. And it's like, now I always see it.
Yeah. You look at the door, you're like, I know what's going on here.
All Division 1 players are going, are they talking about weird doors? And I see George, who's been with us since the Division 1 days, going, yep, where's the weird door? You'll never know. Okay, so let's get back to the kind of, I guess, the Lego stuff. Look, I'm so excited. How do you get the stuff into the game in the first place?
The Legos?
Now we're talking about, okay, so you can create this, you can take the assets, et cetera, et cetera. But how does it practically work to kind of populate the level, with the environment props?
Right. Well, I can only speak about the companies that I've worked with, of course. But I'm assuming that most companies just have an asset browser or like a overall level where all their assets are displayed. And that's kind of where you go in and you look through the assets that are there. It's kind of like shopping, you know. You go through your list of everything that you have. You're like, I like this. Drag and drop. Okay, now I have this. What can I do with this?
Right.
And you just kind of continue shopping until you found all of the assets that you need, all of the items that you need. You put it in your shopping cart. You go to the checkout. You check out and you put it all in your own house, your own level, and you start building new things with it.
Right.
So that's like the general way of how you start is like you analyze everything that you have and what you can do with it. And then you just start placing them together and a lot of copy pasting.
Yeah, I can imagine. But how do you start that process then? Now we're really down into practical stuff. Like you have the block out, you have your assets, you know, okay, I'm going to create a hallway.
Yeah.
A cool looking, obviously not a game designer, an art director.
It's going great.
Or a level designer. don't play any games I make, obviously. No, but you have a location. You're going to create something with it. How do you just start dragging, grab this, place it there, start manipulating, and then can you just build upon that, throwing stuff?
Well, if you want to
throwing stuff.
Just randomly put
you know
them
what
there.
I mean.
If you want to take the hallway that you're saying as an example, you start to think, what is in a hallway, right? And there is a lot more things in a hallway than you're thinking of.
See, this is what I was thinking of. I knew what I was doing.
Oh, okay. Mm. You were forcing me. So yeah, if you think about a hallway, what is in a hallway? A hallway has doors. What does a door have? You're analyzing everything now. What does a door have? It has a doorknob, a lock. What else is in a hallway? You have light switches. You have a trim of a floor, trim of a ceiling, the ceiling panels. What is beyond the ceiling panels? Is there pipage? Is there anything connected to that? Is there a fire alarm? You're making a list in your head of everything that could possibly be in a hallway. And that list is always a lot longer than you think. And that's where you start blocking out your own assets, like we said before, right? Because most of the time you won't have all of the assets that you'll need. most assets that you get are like the generic assets that you can use everywhere. But now we're talking about specific things.
Right.
So if you go to specific things, then you're going to want to block them out, make a request to your prop team, or in some cases, in smaller companies, environment artists make the complete asset as well themselves. Here at Massive, for example, that's all split up. We have level artists, tech artists, prop artists. So it's more split up. Everybody's more focused in one specific area of expertise.
Yeah, exactly. The AAA.
Exactly. Most AAA studios are like specific expertise focused on one specific job, and you get really good at that. But in some smaller companies, an environment artist does everything to right. from lighting to asset creation to texturing.
Right.
So it's a great skill to have, obviously. So making those block out assets, you and the more detail that you make them, the easier the job gets for the prop artist, because they have a better idea of what you're actually trying to make.
Right.
Yeah, once you have those block out assets, you can start populating your hallway with everything that you want in a general first pass of, okay, I want a door here, I want a door here, and continue like that. And if you're happy with it, you can continue to a second pass. You can go to an art director or your lead or even your level designer and say like, hey, can we go over my amazing hallway that I'm making? And see what we can improve here. That's kind of your first steps, right? It's iterate and improve. And the more feedback you ask, the better your hallway would be. It's always feedback. In my belief, that's the core of a great environment artist is asking feedback over and over and over again. Because you can be the best environment artist in the world, but if you're never showing your work before it's done to anybody else, how will you ever improve?
Yeah.
Like other people have different ideas and you can bounce off those ideas to make your work better.
Yeah, and take or not, depending.
Yeah, on. And it's not because somebody gives you feedback that you have to agree with it. You know, you can be stubborn.
Yeah. And so in that process that you were talking about, let's say you're making this hallway, do you first make like a clean pass of like where everything is, and then on the second pass you start giving it more storytelling, like some of the roof, the ceiling tiles are falling down, and you know there's a little water dripping mm-hmm. down here. So first you block it out like it's structurally complete, mm-hmm. and then you start adding in texture work or like storytelling.
Yeah. So most of the time, it depends from person to person, right? You would in that first pass, if you want the ceiling to be broken, you'll already implement that okay. into your scene. Like you don't have to start off with a very clean, structural sound hallway. If that's not the design of the hallway, then don't go there because you'll just waste time and time is important. So if there's a hole in your ceiling, make that hole in there. It doesn't have to be perfect yet because it's your first pass, but your idea needs to come over in that first pass, because if it's not there, your next passes are going to be kind of useless, because you're going to have to go back into your design, you have to rework it, and then you're back at square one and then you did all of that extra work for nothing. And then after your entire design is done and it's approved and everyone's happy, then you go in and start detailing it more. And like you said, adding textures, we have decals, right? It's like this texture that you put on top of your assets to make them look dirty or like have, what's it called, leakage on the top of your walls or pipes. You just have these small texture assets that you can place everywhere to like add more grunge and detail to your entire scene.
Yeah. And now when you're working on populating it and you go to the asset browser and you can't find the asset that you want, so you add in a couple and you kit bash something, but it's like it's not quite working.
Mm.
Then what? Do you send it to a prop artist and like, eh.
There's two ways this can go. Either you give up. You give up, you kill your darlings, right? Don't get too attached to the work that you make, because things will change. So either you actually just give up and be like, okay, I'll replace it with a different asset, the other idea, let's continue. Or if the time is there for the prop artists to work on it, you can make a request and say like, hey, I really tried, but it didn't quite work out how I wanted it to. You're like kind of better at this than me.
And if you don't fix it, it'll be in the game like this, and your name will be in the title.
Yeah, and I'll make sure everybody knows. I will throw you under the bus. Yeah, and I mean, in most cases, there will be time, or they'll make time, or they'll readjust things, and it will be fine. But you have to be ready to tell yourself that, okay, I'm going to throw this away.
You mentioned one thing during the course of this, which we haven't talked about yet, really, working with the lighting team. Because lighting will need to, okay, so you've built this beautiful hallway, and you as you said, there's stuff falling down, and there's a little leakage, and there's some, the roof is kind of damaged. But then you've done all this, and then lighting steps in.
Yes, so lighting is most of the time the last step in the entire process. And also, never piss off a lighting artist. You need them.
Never.
There's not enough of them. If you want a job, become a lighting artist.
Also, go back in the feed because we have a whole interview with a lighting artist.
There you go.
Very fascinating.
Yeah. So yeah, rule number one, never piss off a lighting artist. You need them.
First thing you learn in game design school?
Yes. I mean, they don't tell you, but you need to know.
Okay. Best advice given on this podcast so far.
Yeah, trust us. Take this by heart. But yeah, they are the last step in the entire process most of the time. They will do a pass before it is done, but their actual final thing will be after you are actually finished with the entire thing that you're working on. But they have so many things to work on as well, because every landmark you make, they have to light.
Right.
So they can't wait until every single landmark is done, because that would just be a waste of time. Because what do they do in the meantime, right? Yeah. So they have to go in and do some first passes, get the idea right. It's the same thing as like what we do, but a lot more technical as well, because they need to know all the values of light and how things interact with light, bouncing, way more technical than I'm capable of. So they do a lot of setup work as well and preparation work before they actually go in and do their final lighting pass. And I hope I'm not saying anything wrong, because I don't know. Like, they're magic. A lot smarter than me. But that's how I interpret it, at least.
Can that change things? Like, you've done this beautiful thing, and then they go in with light, and they're like, this is impossible to make look good. Or at that point, they just make it look good because they're just such good.
Like, most of the time, they just take your work and make it so much better.
That's fair.
Like, you get your work back, you see the lighting pass, you're like, yeah, I did that. No, no, the lighting artist did that. They made it shine. See what I did there?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I've seen a couple of examples of that, like level design and environment art and world design and stuff without lighting.
Oh, yeah.
And sure, it looks pretty. I mean, and then they come in. And it looks amazing.
Yeah, it's a world.
I'm sorry, nothing
difference.
Against your work.
No, I agree.
Such a difference it makes.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I've always wondered about game development, especially in a AAA environment, are you sometimes working within the same space? Like, say you have a pretty big section of an open world, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, you're making this monument, and then you're done with the monument, and you start working on something at the roots of the monument. And then is the lighting technician working on lighting the monument? We're like, where comes the point where you hand off? It's like, okay, now you can take a pass.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I'm actually working on a landmark right now with multiple people at the same time, also like multiple environment artists, and. That's where communication becomes like really important, because you know you don't want to destroy the work of the other person, because you're working on the same location. You have to communicate every single time what you're doing, like, oh, I'm going to be working on this area now. Please don't touch anything or I will cry. Crying has happened. So at that point, communication is so important. And then it's the most important part there is like, how is your... landmark set up structure-wise, like layer-wise, because it's built up in different layers. Everybody can have their own layers, and you can work in that area. I can work in that area. And that's also then for lighting, they have their own layers as well. So in general terms, they can work on the same area as you are, because they have their own their own stuff to work with, and it doesn't really interfere with whatever we're doing. But it can clash if you are making an update to an area that they're lighting.
They got a perfect shadow on them. Yeah, you remove something.
Yeah, and then you submit your work, and then the next day you get an angry message from a lighting artist saying, like, what the fuck happened here, man? Why is my shadow gone? And you're like, oh, sorry, I didn't tell you. So communicate, please. Everything you do, communicate everything.
Yeah. Seems to be a general good advice for game design. Just talk to everybody.
Talk.
All the time. Yeah. So if I'm... If I'm a student or just interested in art and environments or level design or whatever, and listening to you now and going, huh, there's so much creativity in environment art. I'd like to give this a go. Mm. Do you have any like general tips where people should start Minecraft? It's obviously one. So we've covered that.
General tips where they can start. Well, like you said, I guess any creative space that you can find, use that to actually be creative, right? If you want to be a concept artist, draw every single day, buy a sketchbook, draw on the train, draw on the bus, practice. What was the question?
If I want to get started in environment design,
yeah, okay.
Like, so where do I start?
Okay, so we're taking you as an example right now. Okay, so go to a recruiter.
I can give an... I'll go to HR. They sit just next to me. You're like, hey, I want to be an environment artist now.
Change of career path.
No, but because I'm thinking about like how difficult it is. But at the same time, I tried modding in Dragon Age a long time ago. So I booted up and I had my character and standing on a field of grass. And I'm looking around and realize everything is just empty. Mm-hmm. There's so much work to be done here. So I quit the modding tools and never went back.
Uh-huh.
But if I actually would have committed, where should I have started? What should I have done at that point?
Well, it's a very daunting thing, like starting.
Yep.
You know, I have that same problem as well. When I want to start a new project in Unreal or whatever, you know, I open up my engine and it's empty.
Yep.
And that's very daunting, you know. You don't know, like, oh, what am I supposed to do now? Start with an asset, start with a light? I don't know.
Yeah.
So greatest advice I can give you there is just start.
Yep.
Like there's nothing more to it than just starting, because it's getting you in a flow. If you actually start placing something, you're getting in this flow of making things and continuing, and then you get motivated by your own work and involve other people in it, get them motivate you. And that's the most important step is starting, and then to actually get into becoming an environment artist, there's game design schools like I went to that really helped me, because that prepared me in a lot of different ways to the job that I wanted to do. And game design school can be a lot of things, right? I had courses of stylized work, level design work, drawing, and then in the later years, you go more specific as you know what you want to do. There's also character arts that you can do in those schools. So those things really help. I mean, they're there for a reason, right? They're there to prepare you, and they do work.
Right.
Yeah, it always comes back to do.
Yeah, do. Start.
There we go.
Start. Always start.
Yeah. And I mean, especially when you're working in a digital format, you can just place things in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can always remove and put something else. But, you know, it's the fear of the blank page.
Yes.
It's like if I were writing a script, I just start writing my thoughts. And then, you know, I go back and it starts forming as I'm writing it. And I would like to think that the process is kind of the same. You start throwing stuff in there and it's like, ah, well, that doesn't work. You move that and it gets a little bit better every single iteration. Hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the thing, right? People are afraid that their work is going to be bad.
Yeah, and it will be, but then it will get...
It's going to be shit, yeah. but that's okay.
keep polishing and eventually...
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's the same as a first draft of, like you said, the script. Like, nobody knows where to start. You just write whatever you want and then you read it back and you're thinking to yourself, what the hell did I write down? Mm-hmm. This is terrible. That's the same with environment art. First thing you're going to make, it's going to look like shit. And then you're going to go back in and you're like, okay, I can move this, I can move that. And then that makes this composition better. And it's this iteration film. That's why we also have different phases in industry of or block out and polish and everything. Because we don't make good stuff at first either. It looks bad, but we iterate on it. Yep. We make it better as we go.
Right. Make it more and more detailed.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for being here today. I think we learned a lot about how it works. I'm going to go look next time I get to play a game. It never happens because I just got a kid, so I never play video games again.
Look for the tall doors.
Yeah, I'm going to look for the doors. I'm going to look for the kitbashing. And yeah. You've just ruined video games.
Oh, you're so welcome. If I can't enjoy them, you can.
But thank you very much for coming, man.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you all for watching and listening. And remember, of course, to like and subscribe.
Rate and review. Send us an email.
Yeah. And we'll see you on the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.